And now, an Envision Financial podcast with Luke Smith on Canberra's 2CC.
And we're talking all things Envision Financial. Luke Smith, good afternoon to you.
Mate, how are you?
All right, how's your week been?
You know what, I'm just glad that it's over, to be honest. 30 June couldn't come fast enough this year, and for those of the people out there listening, it's 4:30 on Friday. You cannot make another contribution this year, just in case you were fancy and ringing the office at 10 to 5 and saying, help me, help me. Unfortunately, that ship's
sold. So I can't go out and buy that Jaguar?
Well, you can go out and buy it, but you're not going to get a deductible contribution in a super today, so.
Really?
Yeah, and it just, it doesn't matter how early you tell people. It's on the list of going to get two things, and that'll just never change. So
yeah,
it is what it is.
You've missed the bus, as it were.
It's well and truly sailed. Yes.
Okay, well, today we're looking at what is good, what to look for in a good super fund, and how to evaluate the one that that you have. When people consider their existing funds, I mean, what are some of the key things that they have to look for?
Well, look, I think I use this analogy a lot in the office, in that super funds are a lot like cars, in that they have different features, they have different purposes, they have different cameras, different sensors, different seats, different engines. And when you're thinking about buying a car, you really think about what its use is going to be.
Mm.
Do I live on a property? Maserati probably won't go too well in a paddock. If I live in the city, do I need an F-250 that I can't park in Westfield? And so on and so on. So when people are looking at their superannuation funds, some of the key things that I think are worth looking under the hood at are obviously the investment options to start with. So a lot of people tell me they want control and they want to be able to buy things that are good for them. Now, that could be a combination of whether you can buy shares, whether you could buy specialised managed funds, whether you could buy exchange-traded funds or ETFs. So they're a really good way to get a broad spread of diversification at a very, very, very low price. So the things that you can buy should be evaluated. The misconception that cheaper is better, for me, looking at cost is just the lowest common denominator when you don't know anything else. And I can appreciate that for people that don't know what to look for, is their measure of value.
Mm.
But when in actual fact they could be robbing themselves of opportunities, potential returns and other benefits such as, you know, being able to hold listed shares and maximise your franking credits. If franking credits were such a talking point in the election, why are people not making the most of these things in their biggest retirement asset? So being in a fund that doesn't allow you to buy shares and control those franking credits then inadvertently says you may be paying more tax. You may not have the same yield. You may not be able to fund the pension payments that you want using income over capital. So looking at what you invest in is very good. Look at the administration fees. Okay, how does the fund charge you? All right, now, most funds will charge you an admin fee so that you can be a member of that fund and you can then gain access to the benefits of that fund, such as shares, ETFs and the like. So look at the admin fee and the costs. The big one that I think people discount is look at the internal cost ratio, or ICR. And what that is that's the individual charge for the option that you invest in. So, for example, if I'm in an industry fund or if I'm in a retail super fund and I'm in the balanced option of said fund, there will be a charge to be investing in that option. Okay, now it might be 1.5%. Depending on the provider, it could be 2.5%. It could be a diversified option at 0.25%. And a lot of people miss this one because they look at a super fund and say, what's the admin fee? Oh, it's zero. But then they don't realise that extra fat has been built into the ICR cost to replace the otherwise charged admin fee. So
that doesn't have to be declared?
It's declared, yeah. Look, for sure, it's always declared, and every investment option that charges it obviously has it in the PDS, and it's part of the disclosure paperwork of the fund, but it's not one that people look at because it's not an admin charge. Mm. But in a way, it's sort of admin by stealth.
I'm going to say they're fudging it.
Yeah, it's...
Well, that's a non-professional
Look,
they're fudging it.
It's one of those things. It's not illegal, but it may not have been pointed out.
Right.
Or you may not know to look for it. So I recommend that people look at the admin fee and then look at the internal cost ratio. Because certain large providers are notorious for saying, we don't have an admin fee, but we'll charge you 2% on what you hold.
Okay.
So looking at that's very important. Look at... obviously, how you can use franking credits. Are they passed out to you or are they collected? Also, consider the insurance options in the fund. So are there multiple providers? What's the cost of the cover? what's the structure and some of the benefits that are available, because not all insurance is the same. So understanding if you're going to use your super fund to hold some insurance, have a look at the definitions. Is it medically underwritten? Is it group cover? It depends on what you're paying. And again, assuming that because it's in an industry fund is a huge misconception that, one, it's potentially the best out there, and two, it's actually cheap. Because I think there's a misconception out there that industry fund equals cheap. And in some situations that may be true, but not always. Mm. So don't assume that you're getting the best deal just because the ad on TV says that you need to compare the pair. The other thing to think about also is the risk profile of their investment. So what I mean by that is how your money is invested. And what I use here from an analogy standpoint is, how fast are you driving the car? If the speed limit's 100 and you're doing 40, then that will cause its own problems. And let's say doing 40 and 100 is holding a lot of cash and fixed interest. It's very safe, it's very secure, but it also doesn't grow. It doesn't provide you a solid rate of return given where cash rates are at, and it won't offset the effect of inflation. So It's dangerous. Just as doing 160 Ks in a 100 zone is dangerous, because if you hit a tree, there's a very good chance you're not going to get out of the car. So understanding your risk profile and what your selected profile is actually doing. After many, many years in this industry, I can honestly say that my perception or understanding of what constitutes a balanced fund these days is getting cloudier and cloudier.
Really?
Yeah. So as a planner, as somebody that looks at a risk profile, my view of balanced has always been, I think of a seesaw, 50-50, defensive and growth. Some industry funds say they have a balanced fund and run 80 to 90% growth assets. But because the name's balanced, mums and dads out there go, oh, well, that's okay, that's a balanced option. And when you point out the underlying parameters and where the money's invested, they actually realise that 140, 150 in a 100 zone actually wasn't where they thought they were driving. So have a look under the hood, check the asset allocation of your selected profile, and make sure it's in line with how fast you want to drive your car.
And if you're driving at 40 kilometres an hour in a 100 kilometre zone, you're just going to piss off all those people behind you.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. That's the number one thing that goes on the window when we're talking about the impacts of doing 40 and 100. That's exactly right.
Okay, let's get down to the charging fees. How do funds charge fees, and are they all the same?
Yeah, look, great. So this sort of follows on to the comments I made earlier. So when we're looking at the fees and charges, it's important to separate what you're looking at. So you've got your admin fee. Now, admin fee is generally a sliding scale depending on the fund. So a good retail fund will charge you a fee on the value of your investment. The greater the investment, the lower the fee, so that it averages out. Some funds will charge you a flat admin fee for automatic membership. Generally speaking, a lower admin fee could mean a higher ICR cost or internal cost ratio of what's in there. It could also mean that you just get limited options. If you're paying a low admin fee, the fund that you're in may have 4, 5, 6, 7 options, and that's it. And I liken that to a tradie coming to my house with a screwdriver and a Phillips head. He's probably not going to be able to do all the jobs I need him to do without a full toolkit. So people should think about their choices and the cost at which they are foregoing it when they look at their admin fee. Also look at whether there's a fixed fee. So one of the big benefits of a self-managed super fund is people like the transparency of a fixed cost. So whether there's $700,000 in the fund or $2 million in the fund, there's a fixed transparent cost that gives you scaling benefits as the value of your asset grows. So that's a big way of looking at an upside of a self-managed super fund. Obviously the ICR. Mm. Now, that should range really, depending on the complexity of the product, anywhere from 0.25 to 0.7. And if you look across your portfolio, you could have a very well-diversified portfolio with shares, managed funds and ETFs, sometimes cheaper than the internal cost ratio of an industry fund. Because obviously shares don't charge an ICR. Mm. It's only charged by assets that are provided by a third party that give you broader diversification. So check your ICR costs. If you're paying any more than 1%, There's definitely funds that you could go out to that will give you a benefit and a saving and give you greater diversity. So that's what to look at when you're considering your individual investments. Obviously, check the exit fee. Some funds will have them. Switching fees, moving between investments. Some funds will charge that, or you may get one or two free switches a year and then they'll charge you after that. Also look at third-party fees. So super splitting, things like that, where they're not necessarily a mandated rule of the fund, but you can take advantage of it. There will be a charge for those depending on what and how it's policed. So something like super splitting, court separations, rollovers, paying of insurances. Some funds charge to pay third-party insurance policies. So understanding where your fees are going. If you shaved 0.25 or half a percent on $500,000 over a 10-year period, you're talking about a significant amount of additional return for absolutely no risk. So I think people need to look under the hood and get a handle on what they're paying. And I'll give you an example. I was doing some work for a lady in Melbourne a couple of weeks ago, and we were tallying up the six or seven funds that she'd accumulated over her working life, which in this day and age with changing employment isn't uncommon. And she was getting charged by a certain provider 1.56% on cash, just to sit in cash.
Oh.
Yeah, so, you know, again, if you don't look, you don't know. And the other little sneaky one that people need to be mindful of is when they're looking at the headline admin rate, there's one provider out there that will remain nameless. It's an extremely sharp headline rate. They say, right, my admin fee is this. And then, as you said, they fudge, charging you 2% on cash.
So who's doing this?
Well, let's change the names to protect the innocent. It's another one. Always check the cash account and see what the return is on cash account, because if the admin fee seems too good to be true, they're probably catching it up somewhere else, because there's obviously fixed costs that need to be met, and they generally do that by fudging what's charged on the cash account itself.
Well, again, I've got to ask the question, is that legal? Are they allowed to do that?
Well, as long as it's disclosed. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, it's like most things. Does it pass the sniff test? You know, maybe, maybe not. But if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's definitely not a tiger.
Exactly.
So these are just some of the things people could look at. And look, this is a good time of year, because you'll start getting 30 June distribution statements coming out in July and August. So you'll get your annual notification from the fund. And it's a good way to have a look and say, right, what did I pay? What did I incur? And then break that down. Because if you are in a fund that you haven't looked at for a while, there could be, you know, if you could save 1%, fantastic.
Okay, where do people miss out on opportunities within superannuation?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, to carry on the discussion about what people should be looking for, I think some of the biggest ways that they miss out, or they inadvertently rob themselves of opportunities, obviously, you know, the fees and charges. Mm. Not looking at your fees and charges and taking an active view of those can obviously be very detrimental. And to compound that over year and year and year and year, it's actually a lot worse than people realise. So that's the first place where just having a look and showing some interest can be really, really valuable.
Yep.
The risk profile, as I said before, you know, if you think you're driving 100 in a 100 zone, just check, because there's a very good chance that you may or may not be. And there's a time and a place to hold money in cash. I think, you know, we're currently seeing equity markets being very fully priced, so finding good opportunities and suitable yields at the moment is very, very difficult because of the outpouring of the need for income following, you know, the recent cash rate cuts. Mm. So, you know, trying to live off 1.25% is very difficult. So understanding where your income comes from. I think the other thing is, I find that if you use the term fixed interest, people hear term deposit. So understand fixed interest, because at the moment, good fixed interest funds are providing annual returns of between, you know, 3 and 6%, depending on your exposure. So don't just assume that fixed interest is cash, or fixed interest is a term deposit, because it can be a lot more than that and can have a significant impact on the total return of your portfolio. Look at your options. I think the other thing, people miss out on a lot of good benefits, such as franking credits, mitigating their tax, trying to offset contributions tax by foregoing the use of franking credits. And as I said earlier, the fact that it was such a hot topic in the latest election shows how important and valuable they are. So if you don't know what they are, find out what they are. Because as a lady said to me the other day, Frank is your friend and Frank works for you.
And let's hear it for Frank.
And I just left it at that. Exactly right. So, you know, make sure that your investment choices are appropriate. Make sure that you have all the tools in your toolkit to be able to buy things like cost-effective investments, like shares to manage franking credits, like specialised managed funds to target a certain area. So having a lot of choice is very important. Just because a fund's cheap doesn't mean it's better. As I said earlier, price should not be the key contributor to the value of a product that's provided. Because at the end of the day, whether it's a super fund or a car, do you need a Maserati? Do you need a BMW? Do you need a Commodore? Do you need a Kia? There's a super fund for every sort of car out there. So you need to put together your objectives and your goals with the facility provided by the super fund itself. So understand that. Understand where your income comes from. This one for me is a really big issue because I'm a big advocate of controlling income, because if you need to generate a 5% return and you can get 4 of that with a dividend, then you're limiting your need to access capital potentially at a time that may not be in your best interest. So for me, controlling income as part of your retirement planning is vital in consistency. It's vital when controlling tax and obviously making the most of a tax-free structure, because obviously surplus franking credits are still returned to you because the country voted well and that wasn't taken from us. So if you're not making the most of franking credits, you're really robbing yourself of some good income opportunities. And also make sure that you review the insurance that's in there. I often get told, oh, it's okay, that insurance is in my super fund. And when you work through the definitions and the technicalities of what's in the fund, they're generally found to be rather lacking when compared to a retail policy that could be held inside or outside of super. So understand the quality of the insurance that you have, because a lot of the time it's set in place many, many years ago when your kids were little or you had a mortgage and you've been meaning to look at it and review it and you've paid that mortgage off and the kids are 30 and off doing their own thing and you're still paying for something that you don't need. Mm. So you need to always bring these back to what is my why? Why have I got it? Why would I maintain it? And a lot of people come in, sit down and go, why have I got this? I said, well, you tell me. Sell me on why you'd keep it. And if they can't, I'd say, well, you obviously don't need it. So let's make that saving. Let's get rid of that, because not everybody needs to be insured. There are certain times in your life when you need it more than others, and there's certain policies that will ensure the longevity of your cash flow, like income protection, which are very valuable. So check the insurances inside a fund, because I find a lot of people pay for things they either don't have or they don't have the best possible definition. And when we point those things out to them, they're actually quite shocked that they didn't know that was the case, or they wish they'd looked at it sooner, because they could have had a better contract that could have provided additional payments to them that they may or may not have been able to take advantage of in the past. So there's some of the key things that I'd look to try and see what's happening under the hood of my fund, because they're the areas that 1 or 2% here, 0.5% there of saving, a cheaper premium here, there and everywhere, or the right structure could potentially mean when you need something like insurance the most, you have the greatest likelihood of having a claim, because you have the best possible definitions available to provide the sum insured that you needed for when you took the cover out. So it's really something that pays to, you know, get your head out of the sand and have some interest, because at the end of the day, it's what you're going to lean on to fund your retirement, generally as part of a downsizing strategy when the kids move out and you buy a flat or a unit, because you don't need a big backyard and lots of grass to mow. So,
yeah, well, I guess when you go through all that, I love your analogies, by the way. I reckon they're great. But, you know, if you sort of go through it, the one thing that seems to come out of it the whole lot, and correct me if I'm wrong, is the need to be able to mitigate risk management.
100%.
To try and avoid unnecessary risks. Yep. And I guess they're tricks for new players, but obviously financial advice can help you on that one.
Yeah, look, exactly right. I think we spend a lot of our working life trying to avoid loss. And I think as part of your retirement plan, you spend a lot of time trying to avoid loss.
Mm.
Different sort of loss. One's an income loss, one's an opportunity loss. So whether it's in your accumulation phase or in retirement phase, making sure that you understand what you're doing and why you're doing it is really important, because how your friends invest and the shares that your friends maintain and the lifestyle that your friends need to fund, I couldn't care less about. What do you need?
Yeah.
And counting money in someone else's pocket or doing something that someone else has done. We find this a lot with taking pension options out of some of the government funds. A lot of people come in and go, oh, the ladies at work, they did this. Oh, that's nice. What do you need to do? Well, I'd really like to do this. You know, so assigning or looking at the options that are right for you without getting caught up in the herd mentality of, oh, well, this is what Jenny said at work, or this is what my brother's cousin's third wife did. Okay, that's lovely, and that might be great for them, but what do you need? And it's about understanding. People generally say they need two things. They need good income to fund pension payments, and they need growth to offset inflation. And that's why I'm a big advocate of controlling your income stream, because if you're not controlling your dividends and you're not controlling your franking credits, if you can get money back from the government for tax that doesn't need to be paid, why would you not take advantage of it? Now, if you're in a fund that doesn't give you the ability to hold shares, you're robbing yourself of potential cash income that's paid back to you by the ATO that could be used to fund a holiday, could be used to fund a trip, could be used to be for anything. And it's so important. I've had a box of Kleenex on my desk for the last 3 months talking about the impact of a franking credit loss. And when I point out on some reports what that actually means to people, the box of tissues is getting an absolute working over. So if it's upsetting people to lose them, why are you not proactively trying to get a handle on how you can make the most of them, both in accumulation phase and in retirement phase? So I think people need to, again, look under the hood, consider their why, and then think about their options. Because a little bit of a return here and a little bit of a return there and good solid income along the way, it starts to add up when you think it's a 20, 30-year journey.
Okay, for more information?
Yeah, look, www.envisionfinancial.com.au. Go to the resources tab on the website. We've got the Knowledge Centre there. We've got free membership for a period of time for anybody that wants to subscribe to that. So there's lots of tools, calculators, videos, and you can find a video on Frank and he'll explain about franking credits. You can also obviously Google the Strategy Stacker. You can listen to the podcast and that's on iTunes. You can pause that, take some notes and go back, get your statement out and do that on a like-for-like basis. And obviously there's YouTube. We have the educational content there, obviously from the show, where we pause that halfway through and have some key takeouts so that, again, you can stop it, have a look at your statement, see what you've missed, make sure you've got what you need and then continue watching. So that's Envision Financial Canberra on YouTube. So you can subscribe to that. And then obviously every week we have additions that feed that up.
Great to see you. Great to talk to you. And you'll be with Chris Mack next week. And
happy days.
Yep. And I'll be listening.
All right. See you when you get back.
No, I won't.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye. Luke Smith from Envision Financial.